Welcome to part two of Should a Woman Take Testosterone with Dr. Nicholas Sharrock. If you want to know the positive impact testosterone hormone therapy can have for women in all stages of menopause, make sure you've listened to part one. In this second part, we're jumping straight into delivery methods, including our favorite, pellets, as well as talking about some of the downsides and what medical societies have to say about testosterone therapy for women. Thanks for tuning in to Healthy Her. Welcome to Healthy Her, the podcast designed to inspire women to lead lives filled with health and happiness. I'm Dr. Amy Brenner, your host discussing nutrition, hormones, aesthetics, sexual health, and more. Join us each week as we dive into feeling better, looking better, and living better. So you brought up pellets. That's probably the most popular route of administration in my practice as well. That's what I currently use for testosterone therapy as a patient. But for people that don't know, what are you talking about, pellets? So can you explain what that is, and as well as some of the other delivery, how do we get the other delivery methods of testosterone?
Sure. There's other forms of testosterone. Once again, non-bioidentical versus bioidentical. Most of what you hear about as far as people utilizing testosterone that get it from gyms and things like that, those are non-bioidentical testosterones. And they tend to have a lot of side effects, but they tend to do things like produce a lot of muscle. We're talking about human identical or bioidentical testosterone, which means that the chemical structure of the testosterone that we use is absolutely identical to what it is that your body makes. So we're not even really giving you anything that isn't floating around your system already. We're just modifying the levels. Testosterone comes in all different forms. You can get it in an injection. You can get it in a cream. You can get it orally, and you can get it in pellets. And like I mentioned earlier, pellets have been around since 1938. And I've used pellets. I remember using pellets when I was a resident that I used to use. I was involved with a study that used goserelin pellets, which is a GnRH agonist. That's kind of beyond the scope of this thing. But we used to inject them into women. And it would give them about 3 months worth of a medication. And that was whenever I first was introduced to pellets. Now, I didn't really start utilizing pellets in my practice until about almost 8 years ago when I talked to you and you were explaining to me how effective they were in your practice. And pellets, they are... they're like white cylinders, and they're about the size of a piece of long grain rice. And they go in under the skin into the fatty layer under the skin. So they're subcutaneous administration. And the way that we do that is we clean the skin off and we give you a little bit of numbing medicine and let that sit for a bit. And then we clean the skin off some more, and then we make a tiny little incision, just about 3 millimeters. And we insert these pellets with a device called a trocar, and we put them under the skin. And those pellets then go into the fat, and we take out the trocar, and we close up that little incision with Steri-Strips. The interesting thing about pellets is that there is nothing in the world that I can give anybody that absorbs like a pellet. When the testosterone, and we use testosterone, we'll also use some estrogen pellets for women as well. But we will put these pellets under the skin, and you'll get this nice rise in hormone level that just gradually and slowly, slowly, slowly comes on down over a period of a few months. And then whenever the pellet's just about gone, it drops off pretty quickly. And I don't know about you, but the majority of patients in my practice can tell me to the day when they feel like their pellet wore off.
Yeah, I do too. It's like a light switch. I'll have a night where I'm like, I didn't sleep last night. And I look at my calendar, I'm like, oh, it's been 12 weeks exactly. And that happened a couple times. And my husband's like, you're crazy. Like, I'm like, nope. Like, it's for real. Like, I'll get have another
Yeah.
one someplace. To, and I'm like, okay, back to sleeping good. Like, it's like a light switch for me for as far as sleep.
Yeah. And for a lot of other people as well, women and men.
Let's talk about the other delivery methods. How can women get testosterone into their body? If, and then we could talk about maybe some of the pros and cons of just delivery methods of testosterone.
Yeah. So some of the other methods, can be oral, and I don't like using oral
I
testosterone
never
at
use
all.
oral.
I never prescribe it. I have not prescribed it since they took Estratest off the market years and years ago. The most common form of testosterone that I use outside of pellets are creams, and creams have to be applied every night. They can be a little bit messy. They can actually be transferred to people around you, so you have to be careful about where you put them and who you touch and afterwards. And the other form is injections. And the tough thing about creams and injections is that the levels can change dramatically, and they're much more variable than what I see with pellets. Pellets, the changes that go on with pellets are so consistent, insertion to insertion, that there's times that we don't even have to check blood work for people. Really, it's based many times on just the clinical result and the resolution of symptoms. So we do check levels on occasion, and there's things that we need to monitor and to keep people safe. But interestingly enough, we with pellets, you'll tend to get a significant rise in hormone level, but boy, it seems to be that level that seems to make a huge difference for the people who are treated with them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The creams, you're absolutely right. They can be transferred to family members. And how we know this is, and I think even if you're careful of, you know, I put it on, I don't snuggle with my husband, we don't share towels, I do it first thing in the morning after we go our separate ways, or I'm sorry, like the male will do that, is we're really good. But then I've had patients come in and we do their initial blood work and their testosterone's really high. I'm like, what's going on here? Like, is your husband on testosterone? Or like, yeah, but we're really good and we do all of the things. And so that therefore, like, we know that it can get transferred to other people, which I think if you're like an empty nester or maybe you have teenage kids, like it's maybe not that big of a deal.
Right.
You know, if your husband gets some testosterone, like no big deal. But where I get concerned if is little kids in the house.
Yeah.
So even if you're like really good and really safe, because we're not checking hormone levels on little kids to know if they're getting exposure. And I've just seen that enough with female patients coming in with their initial labs, with their hormones being elevated and their husband being on a testosterone cream.
Yeah, and high levels of testosterone in kids can actually cause early closure of the growth plates. So yes, it's definitely not anything that is good to have kids around when you're doing creams.
Yeah. I mean, the injections, I personally, I tried the injections for a while. Like, I feel like I still felt as good. But for me, I was like, why do I want to give myself a shot a couple twice, like twice a week when I can have like one shot, if you will, every 12 weeks? And so after I did it for a while, I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't like shots just as much as the next person. And so I'm like,
Right,
why am I doing the
right.
shot thing twice a week? But sometimes patients, in my opinion, like want to start with those things because they know they can stop at any time.
Right.
So versus the pellet, like you and I both
Yeah.
know, well, once it's in there, it's in there.
Yeah, and so in that way, a pellet is like a shot. that once it goes in, it doesn't come out, and you're kind of, you know, stuck with that for 3 months. And we tell everybody about that. But interestingly enough, in that study that I was telling you about in 2021, where they looked at 1.2 million pellet insertions, after two insertions, the retention rate was 93%. So people who, and I tell people, when you start pellets, you definitely want to give it a year. Because the first time we put a dose in, we're always in the ballpark, but we may have to adjust it up or down, depending upon the individual. And it takes a little time to find the exact dose that people just seem to feel right on. And everybody's different.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you said that, of bringing that point up of giving it a year, because like I like to really kind of start low and go slow, because, you know, I tell people like, look, the more we give you, like usually the better you feel, but there's a higher rate of side effects. So, you know, if we could use the lowest dose that gets you symptom relief, even better. So, but sometimes, you know, we put it in and you're like, I didn't feel anything. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's a couple of different ways to initiate pellets, and one is start low and slow, but then there's a weight-based formula that we oftentimes used to get people started, and yeah, you know, for some people that's awesome and they absolutely love it.
I like the weight-based formula. I think you and I dose pretty much the same, but every now and then somebody's really nervous and like, can I just start really low? And I say, look, that's fine. The downside of doing it is we can definitely go low and slow, but the downside is you might not feel anything. So you just have to know, like, to be patient.
Right. And that kind of gets back to that whole tipping point thing that sometimes the levels don't get you to where you want to feel real well. But yeah, I totally agree with you. There are people who are a little hesitant or feel that they're sensitive to medications, and starting in a much lower dose than the weight-based formula is certainly beneficial.
Let's switch gears and talk about the potential side effects or maybe some potential negatives of this kind of therapy, which, you know, it's not magic. It's not a magic wand, which is, again, well, then I'd like to go right into like what kind of doctor you need to be seeing to make sure you're being monitored appropriately. But what are the downsides of testosterone therapy pellet therapy? We talked about transfer of creams, that people need to have a full educated discussion of risks and benefits.
Probably the most common thing that we see is that about 20% of women might get oily skin or even an acne breakout. And then the second most common thing that we see is about 5% of women will notice some unwanted hair growth, and usually that's facial hair growth. A lot of people are concerned about weight gain, and I tell people that whenever it comes to pellets, that lean muscle mass is a lot more dense than fat is. So initially they might see their weight go up a little bit. But over time, like after a few insertions, they really notice that it's their body form that seems to change, and they just seem to be much more lean and much more toned. It's something that I think is, if we explain those things, and to be honest with you, most of the side effects that happen with pellets can be adjusted by just adjusting the dose, you know, and there are some other therapies that we can use to help with that as well.
Yeah. I mean, even me personally, like I've never in my whole life really had an issue with acne. And since I've been taking testosterone, I'll get a zit a couple times a year. For me, I'm like, okay, 3 to 4 zits a year, between all of the benefits, like it's so worth it for me. I get little hairs here now. I've since like done laser hair removal, but I've been plucking and doing waxing of my chin and upper lip since I was like a teenager. And even my college daughters are coming in for laser hair removal because they have unwanted hair. So I do think I agree with you. Testosterone can make that worse. It seems like it's more in people that have darker skin. I don't know, maybe more like the Italians.
More of a Mediterranean background. Yeah, absolutely.
But I call them nuisance side effects. And it's not something like you're going to turn into a werewolf over 3 months. It's more like after you've been doing it for a really long time.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about, and what a lot of people don't understand whenever it comes to hormones is that oral administration of hormones, I don't believe is the safest route to go. I thoroughly believe that this subcuticular route is just so much more beneficial and so much safer. There's no risks of blood clots. There's no risks of the risk of infection and things like that is extremely low. Every now and then, somebody might extrude a pellet where one might get a little too close to the skin and your body says, oh, that's like a splinter in there, and pushes it out. But outside of that, it is really unusual to see any adverse effect.
Yeah, I say, you know, every now and then, like even for me, I've been doing this for like 10 years and, you know, you might have a little soreness. Like, again, it's usually not anything I notice unless I happen to like go like this way. Oh, it's a little sore. But if I don't ever touch it or mess with it, I don't ever notice it. I'd say one time in 10 years, I just happened to like look at myself in my double mirror in my bathroom and saw a huge bruise on my butt. And I was like, oh, how did that happen? So that can happen. It's happened once in 10 years to me as a patient. So kind of just, you know, it requires a little mini procedure. But same thing with like getting your blood drawn. Like usually it's not an issue, but I've definitely got my blood drawn and then ended up with a huge bruise. Pretty rare, but it can happen when you're putting a needle in the skin.
Right.
Yeah. Let's talk about like, is this FDA approved? What our college says, what, you know, our organizations that you and I get our training from. And, you know, there's an organization called NAMS, the North American Menopause Society. Like, what do all these people have to say about it? FDA, ACOG, and NAMS.
Well, there is no FDA approved form of testosterone for women. There are several formulations for men, and there are some studies that talk about treating hypoactive sexual dysfunction disorder with testosterone, but they treat women with guys' formulations. And whenever it comes to FDA regulation, you know, these compounding pharmacies, they get a bad rep because people say that they're not FDA approved, but they are FDA regulated, and they are regulated by the State Board of Pharmacy, and they are constantly submitting the medications that they make to make sure that the dosage and the potency and so many factors and that the integrity of the medication is there. So I think there's a lot of misinformation about things that aren't really true. But if you don't know a compounding pharmacist, you should talk to one, and they can tell you everything that they have to go through to make sure that they are in good standing.
So as you mentioned, it seems like some of these organizations make it sound like a compounding pharmacy is like, you know, in their garage, like mixing up these drugs. But that is so far from the case. It seems like, you know, I've gotten notices of, you know, this batch of whatever pellets was off by like 0.03%, and you need to notify your patients. But from what I understand is even medications that you can get at your Walgreens Pharmacy or CVS that are generics, like birth control pills or thyroid medicines, that even if it's generic, generics are allowed to be off by, it was, I can't remember if it was 10% or 30%, either way, and that's still acceptable.
Yeah. So my oldest daughter is a pharmacist, and she says, yeah, there's a range of error with every medication. It isn't just hormones; it's every medication out there, and that's what a lot of the FDA, you know, does to look at. And the companies that these compounding pharmacies get their medications from, they're really strictly looked at. And then the compounding pharmacies, they, like I said, they have to submit samples of their batches to get tested all the time for potency and accuracy.
So what do you say to patients? Because I tell every patient when this is not FDA approved, this is FDA approved. Like, I think that's an important consideration. But what do you explain to patients when maybe somebody is concerned that we say it's not FDA approved?
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things in medicine where we use medications that don't have an FDA approval for that particular thing. For instance, in obstetrics, and I'm still delivering babies, but in obstetrics, we use a medication called Cytotec on a regular basis to try to soften the cervix to make inductions easier, and it helps us initiate inductions. And it has worked better than anything that was FDA approved over the years. There have been a lot of recommendations for women that have menopausal symptoms that the doctor, instead of prescribing them hormones, that they get prescribed an SSRI, an antidepressant, like Zoloft or Prozac. And those medications aren't FDA approved for that.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that there's a big difference between what is FDA approved, because it costs a lot of money for these companies to get something FDA approved. And if they can't find any profitability in it, they typically won't even try to pursue that FDA approval.
Yeah. I mean, you and I can go on and on and on about traditional gynecology and the things we do that aren't FDA approved of, you know, I even think like using birth control pills for endometriosis, like every gynecologist does that. And those have never been studied for endometriosis, but we do that all the time. I know that a lot of OBGYNs think that maybe not so much testosterone, but I think a lot of OBGYNs will not prescribe testosterone for women. And a lot of OBGYNs think that pellet therapy is also the antichrist. And I got to be honest, like I was one of those people 15 plus years ago when I was in my big group practice, and I would see a lot of the mismanagement of hormone therapy, and I felt like I was cleaning up this one Medispa's kind of hormone mess. Can we talk a little bit about why a lot of OBGYNs are so opposed to this kind of therapy?
Well, that's a great question. and you know, in 2002, when the estrogen progestin arm of the Women's Health Initiative study came out, it scared a lot of people off of hormones. There was a significant decline in the number of hormone prescriptions that were written for just estrogen and progestin. And it scared a lot of physicians out of prescribing hormones. And it scared a lot of medical institutions out of teaching about hormones. And it scared a lot of residencies out of teaching about hormones. And sadly, we are left with kind of a generation of practitioners who really does not understand things about hormones and thoroughly believes that any hormone therapy is not good for people, that it can increase cancer risk, and that it can increase problems with heart attacks and strokes and blood clots. And I mean, it just goes on and on. But I really believe that if you really look at the recent literature, that so much of that has been refuted and so much of that has been figured out as to why, you know, those things happened like that. That I don't think that everybody, you know, when we get so busy with so many aspects of our practice, that we don't keep up on the literature in certain aspects of hormones to really be on top of what's going on. And testosterone therapy in general, because the majority of what is supported is estrogen and progestin therapy, you see very little in the mainstream medicine literature on the use of testosterone. But that literature is out there. And people just have to read it. And I can't help it that some people choose not to read things. But it really is just kind of a lack of understanding about really how beneficial it can be. And some of these doctors, you know, who feel this way, I highly encourage them to come spend one day with me. They would be amazed at how many, countless number of people benefit from this therapy.
Yeah. I would imagine, though, that I'm sure I would think that people come to see you who have been mismanaged by hormone therapy. And because I see that as well, of it's, you know, and I think, like, looking back when I was against pellet therapy, is it's not the pellets, it was the person putting in the pellet, also maybe being overdosed or thinking, like, the other thing this isn't the cure-all. Like, there's more to menopausal women than just their sex steroids. So we talked about how, you know, this can help so many people, but it's not the only thing. And so that's what I see, is some of these, like, pop-up, like, pellet clinics where all they do are pellets. And then they just keep upping the dose and upping the dose. And then you end up with all these side effects. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, it might be your thyroid, it might be your adrenals, it might be your insulin, it might be, like, gut issues, like, it might be the prescription medications you're taking. So this isn't, like, the end all be all for everybody. And I think those places that are just pellet factories sometimes give the maybe illusion or impression that this is going to fix everything.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, pellets aren't for everyone. You know, you have to individualize each patient's therapy to fit them. And I agree, it is not the end all be all. And yes, the majority do great with pellets, but there are some people who don't, and they don't need to continue to be on pellets. And if they are, you know, don't want to try them, I don't have a problem with that either. It is really, you know, something that you want to be on board with your patient. You want to listen to your patient. You want to hear their symptoms and their complaints, and you want to try to tailor things to the best that you can. And yes, it may be other things like their thyroid or their adrenal glands, or yeah, even their you know, gastrointestinal malabsorption issues, things like that. And you really have to kind of sort that all out. And I agree, a lot of these places that you know, you just come in, you get your pellets, you don't necessarily get monitored, and they don't take care of a single thing having to do with side effects. I agree, they really need to be looked at by somebody who really does this on a very regular basis.
Yeah. On the flip side, when people are having other medical problems, they're not always due to the to the hormone therapy or the pellets. Like, let me tell you about two patients I saw recently. One was yesterday, and she lives a couple hours from us. So she just comes to us actually for pellet therapy, but has a regular gynecologist. And so she came in and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so overdue for this. I can't wait to do this, but I need to talk to you. I ended up having a full hysterectomy because I was having some bloating. And so my doctor ordered an ultrasound and I had all this free fluid in my abdomen. And long story short, like somebody, and she was a nurse. She said, somebody ended up writing in one of the imaging reports that possible carcinomatosis, which is kind of like a variation of ovarian cancer. And so she ended up having a full hysterectomy, ended all up being benign. But her gynecologist said, well, it was probably due to those pellets you were having. And I'm like, no, it is not.
No.
Another patient was on hormone therapy and started having bleeding. And her doctor, who's very anti-pellets, ordered an ultrasound and said it was just a regular ultrasound, said that there was thickening of the lining of the uterus, possible polyps. So I'm like, well, we need to do a little bit more detailed look at your inside of your uterus. So that could be done with a camera called a hysteroscopy, or what we do is a saline ultrasound where I put fluid and in the uterus so I could better see what's going on. And she had a polyp in the uterus, and that what was causing the bleeding. And I'm like, well, that's what's causing your bleeding. I don't think it's the hormone. So we need to remove this polyp. And she's like, well, I knew something was wrong because my doctor said, well, if you just stop the pellets, you know, we don't need to do anything about the polyp. I'm like, what? Like, unrelated. Not everything that happens that's kind of bad is related to hormone therapy. So.
Correct. Correct. You know, and there's, you know, a lot of people who aren't prescribing hormones, that they'll get an ultrasound on a patient and their endometrial thickness will be more than 4 millimeters. And next thing you know, they're going through a whole workup. But it's well established in our literature that endometrial thickness number being less than 4 millimeters is only for people that aren't on hormone replacement therapy at all. It really is, the number is really not even known for what is an average number for somebody who is on hormone replacement therapy. So you have to take all these things into account whenever it comes to treating each individual patient.
Yeah. But I think that's where you and I have an advantage of being gynecologists, is that, you know, hormone therapy absolutely has a side effect. I think bleeding is one of the main side effects that we do see with any hormone therapy, whether it's birth control pills or FDA approved hormones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes the bleeding is related to the hormones, but sometimes it could be, you know, other things that, you know, polyps, fibroids, cancer. And that's where I see, like, as gynecologists, we know the workup versus some of these other places that aren't gynecologists. They'll just fuss with the hormones and they don't know what to do with it. And then that's where it seems like this kind of therapy gets a bad name, because a lot of other people have kind of gotten into the mix.
Right. Right. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Amy, I do want to tell you, and this is kind of how pellets evolved in my practice. But whenever you were first telling me about to you, and you telling me that you started using pellets personally and that they were life-changing. And I said to you, I said, Amy, that's a pretty strong statement. And you told me, you said, I really have no other way to explain it. And that is something that I hear over and over and over again from my patients. Matter of fact, there's not another therapy in my practice where I hear that something is as life-changing as this. But in my own personal life, I decided to schedule an appointment to come down and see what it is that you were doing with pellets in your practice and to spend a day with you. And I remember this vividly because I was scheduled to come down and see you. This was in 2016. And it was on April 9th that I was supposed to come and see you. And on March 27th, I had a heart attack. And a couple of days later, I ended up with a five vessel bypass. And when I got out of the hospital, I called you and told you, hey, Amy, this is what happened. And interestingly enough, the first words that came out of your mouth were, "Oh my God, you need pellets."
I
And
said
I'm like,
that.
"What are you talking about?" Yes, you did. And I said, "What are you talking about?" You told me, you said, "You know, most people who have heart attacks have either low or low normal testosterone." And sure enough, you were right. And I'll tell you, it also has been life-changing for me, just in my energy and the way that I think about things and the way that on a day-to-day basis, the way that I feel strong. I mean, people look at me, they're surprised that I'm actually 61 years old, and I have to kind of laugh about that. I tell them it's the pellets and the Botox, but the thing is I really want to thank you for helping to open my eyes towards this. And I think that a lot of other physicians, if they would only open their eyes and really see what is still out there. And the one thing that I think we can always be in medicine is humble.
Yeah.
And there's always something out there that we can learn.
Yeah. Well, thank you for those kind words. I couldn't agree more. Hopefully, this was helpful for everybody listening, and you've got a lot out of it of the good, the bad, and all things testosterone for women. Did we miss anything?
We could go on and on. I'm sure there's things that we missed, and there's all kinds of aspects that we can continue to talk about. But we'll save that for another time.
All right. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's my honor.
Thanks for listening to Healthy Her. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a quick 5-star review on your podcast platform. Your feedback means the world to us and helps others discover our show. Do you have questions or want to discuss a particular topic? You can reach us by emailing ask@dramiebrenner.com or by calling 513-204-8403 and leaving a voicemail. We might feature your question or comment in an upcoming episode, so don't miss out on the chance to be a part of the conversation. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. We appreciate your support and can't wait to have you back with us next time. Take care, and remember, your Healthy Her journey begins with you. This podcast is for general information only and does not constitute medical advice, the practice of medicine, nursing, or other healthcare services. No patient-physician relationship is formed. The information in the podcast and any references, material, or links are at the sole discretion of the listener and not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not delay or disregard obtaining medical advice for any medical diagnosis or issues that they may have and should seek medical care or advice from their healthcare provider for any such conditions.